Thank you very much for coming. Thank you for coming from Europe. These ladies take a seat in Europe. Actually, I think I'm welcome to see again. This lady came for both budgets yesterday. Are you here for this afternoon's as well?
No.
So, just to tell this afternoon, I'm Susan Blake. I run a company called Respondability. And it's about lots of people feel like this and coverage of this. But keep slipping back into that, and that's the bit of it. I help people to escape the past. And if you've got a trauma of some sort, or anxiety, phobias, anything like that, all belong in the past, and yet we carry it along with us. Not only do we carry it along with us, but it's almost like we've got a rubber band attached to it. And as we try and run forward, it's like attached to it. And we dare cut it. So you know what happens when you cut it off the phone before you cut your face. So we also have this apprehension about getting rid of it. So you can have an anxiety, but then you can have an anxiety about getting rid of the anxiety. Okay, and that's what I deal with. Although I do all these things, I usually deal with people in a therapy mode in like a breakthrough session. So I'll take somebody who's got a severe problem and then work them right through it, and they don't leave in the foot. Okay? It's as simple as that. And that applies to everything. I've got a challenge here for all sorts of things. People come in, it's like a nice little factory where they come in crying, and they go out there and smile. And it's technically between 2.5 to 5 hours. So that's a process of doing. And I don't fix price for that, so people aren't coming in. If you've got anxiety about what it's going to cost you. And if you don't, you go, oh, I'm listening to it, tell me a tale, that's a few pounds, isn't it? There we go. Okay. So that's what I do with it. But I do talks like this because there's ways you can help yourself. And today's talk is about your attitude in your life. And it's a very profound thing, is you might not consider yourself a pessimist or an optimist. You might consider yourself in the middle. But there tends to drift one way or the other depending on circumstances sometimes. And sometimes you're just fixed in one regardless of circumstances. So there's some people who just seem to be genuinely happy all the time, even when they're going through really tough stuff. And they still have a smile on their face. And it's not always a great advantage because you don't get any sympathy. I once at school when I was about 13, I used to run barefoot. No idea why. But I ran barefoot and they allowed them out to their spikes where everybody else would wear crimsons. And they actually trod on the back of my heel and ripped it out of his spikes. So I regretted that one when I was pumping blood out. And I went to the teacher, still smiling, and went, I think I need to go back to first aid, and laughing at me. And he went, oh yeah. It was one of the answers, and he thought, oh yeah. And looked down. And then he just panicked. So, sort of how we are actually affects how other people react to us. And so, the smiling person, we always say that nothing happens in their life that's bad. And, I think it's quite a crude saying, but somebody said it once about me that you look like if you fell in a bucket of shit, you'd come out clean and smelling roses. Anybody's come across that one before? And I have been through some shit in my life. And it's quite funny really, because does anybody else need any gratitude every day? Is that a question? I get gratitude every day. I start off with the older you get, because I'm 62 now, the older you get, you realise it's not about material things. You know, if you have a roof over your head and a pillow to rest your head on at night, you've actually got more than, you know, some 80% of the world population and food and development. And so every day I give gratitude, and I start off with a list of my children, grandchildren, my parents are still alive in their late 80s. I go through all that, the house I live in, and the fact that I live there. And then I get into the last bit, I always say, and thank you for all the shit in my life. Because without it, I couldn't do this. Because I use it as the springboard for everything I do. But I always end with, but don't give me any more, I've got enough anecdotes to keep me up. So I eat with that.
Can I just ask, what type
to, but the first thing in the morning is a good one because it sets you up for the day.
Did you actually talk to yourself when you're doing that?
The thing is, you see, everybody thinks there's rules.
Yeah.
And there are rules. The only rule is to keep positive. We attract, I mean, this is what it's about today, we attract into our life whatever we think about. But it doesn't, your conscious mind doesn't understand negative. So if you think about something you don't want to happen, that's what it's looking for all the time. This is the entire thought of it, so I won't be attracting all the way around. But you see, everybody thinks there's rules, and there are. There's not. Sometimes you get this thing, and you read it, and everybody nowadays, for what you get to read their blog, they go, the 14 steps to, or the 7 steps to, or whatever. And I always read these things going, well, how many other steps can I put in? Because they're not needed. I went to the sanctuary place where all these Buddhist monks were. And we had this wonderful young female monk that came out, smiled, grinned from ear to ear, and asked all these questions. And sometimes people threw things in just to see if they could annoy her. The smile never left her face, she was absolutely open and honest. But they had this sort of thing of getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and having to spin these prayer wheels, and then they had to do this thing at 6, and then they had to do this, and they had to prepare food. And then it was like 3 years before they could become enlightened, and then if they wanted to get further enlightened, they had to sit in a box for 3 years in a room where nobody was allowed to talk to them. And I was thinking, for goodness sake, 4 days after I went there, I had an enlightening experience that just happened to me. I skipped 6 years like in 4 days. Because it was appropriate, and I was ready for it, and I'd done the thing that were in place that went, okay, ready to go to the next level. So, when everything I do, I'm training as a hypnotherapist and an NLP master practitioner. I was chatting to a young guy that's just passed his NLP practitioner course the other day, and he started talking about techniques that were used in NLP. And I suddenly realised I don't use any. I no longer use techniques. All that I've done is I've worked out how your brain works. And although it's incredibly complex, and nobody on the planet can say you know how the brain works, we know there's these neurons and things that fire off and everything else, but it works in a certain pattern. It's almost like in a computer program, because you have all these computer programs, and they're all working for you. And in the main, your unconscious starts off with everything you're born with, so it's running your heart, your lungs, your head, and everything. pH balance, if you get caught, it sends all the signals come from that cell, they go, oh, I'm caught, and it sends all that things in. But it also sends to us all our emotions and feelings and everything else. So as soon as we perceive something, we react to it, not at a conscious level. It's always at an unconscious level. So if something happens, I love my Anthony talk. Anthony is flip your own head to you, isn't it? So now I can't read you, she can pull the right room now, and she could. Yeah. And Anthony Doris, there's no real Anthony so you don't need to report it. And she bought it to the perfume, you know, the old fashioned scent that women used to have in those years. And what happens then is somebody walks past you, it smells like Anthony Doris, and suddenly there's this sort of like, oh my god, but that's the reaction that you've got is, well, you learn to, oh, you smell like she's close enough to hit you, you duck your head. So it's just a reaction. But it comes out as anxiety in the end, because you now know that this isn't bad, but there's still that sort of overall feeling that something bad's about to happen to you. I don't know why I do the anxiety, because I've got a real life anxiety. I didn't eat much as a kid, and I was like 6 going back through when I was 16. I just didn't eat anything. I was so fussy about everything. Don't know how to survive a pot for my time. But my mum used to put me around her there and eat dinner. Particularly if I had some pudding. You haven't eaten your dinner, you can't have pudding. Bang! Right? And it usually came with the last syllable of the last word. Then you put it back. Which is lovely, but you know, that was the way people reacted. And I got a girlfriend at 16 and took her out for a meal. And we had, I don't know, chicken or tea or something else. And then she ordered this apple pie custard or something afterwards. And she said, you're apple pie. Oh, but I think, she went, could you eat it? So I ordered this. And when the waiter brought it, I thought he was going to go, yeah, I mean, he did. I really did. I was waiting for it. But this is what we've got going on in the head. We've got something in there that we're waiting for it to happen. And unless you deal with it at the level it went in at, which is the unconscious level, it doesn't go away. So I dealt with somebody just this week who's been in the most fantastic testimony. And although I do this work all the time, it's very rare that somebody will make it public what's happened to them or what they've done. But she wrote a Facebook page and I asked her if I could use it and she said I can. And she saw her last suddenly something about like this. She came to see me on Tuesday, chronic anxiety. And you could see that sort of, she was almost put down in the middle, that part of her went into a rage and the other part of her was ready to cry. And she switched between those. And she was aware of this. And she thought people didn't like her anymore because she was always angry. But she was always trying to protect me, so she was always saying, don't do that, whatever you do, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. I told you that would happen, now look at me, I mean, you know, you could have stopped it. Boy, heck, we get somebody telling somebody to do all that. And so when she came to see me, I mean, she literally cried when she just spoke to me on the stand, and a friend was a pope. And she came to the house crying, absolutely distressed. And virtually anything I said to her got crying, and I, bit by bit, I introduced humour and various things, until I got to the point where I knew exactly what words would trigger the crying. And I'm a bit terrible at that, I keep throwing them back in just to check. And so I was able to make her cry at work, and I could just say the right words, off you go. And she was with me just under 4 hours, and she went from a level 1 out of 10 of what she thought her quality of life was. And I said, what level do you want before you leave? 10. I went, oh, good, good. Would you take it to 7? If I can get it to 7. And she went, I'd take it 2. If you could just improve on what I wanted to improve. She left at 7. Sorry, I tried to get her 7. She left with an 8. And she sent me this message 2 days later. And she said, then walk up to a 10. Also on my Facebook page, if you go to my Facebook page and friend with me, because it goes up to friends and friends of friends, you'll see what you're doing there. But it's it actually made me feel better. But it's totally changed her life around because she's different with those people, they're different to her. You see, in life we think we can change other people, and we can't. And now I'm going to contradict myself. When you change towards them, they change towards you. So if you want to change somebody else, you change you and your feelings towards them, and they come in line with it. There's a wonderful thing that I learned from a brilliant guy called Martin Wise. I was on a training course, and this guy turned up, and a buzz went around the room that this guy could hypnotize by looking at me. I think it was like, there was this sort of going, can't be true, but everything was saying. And so I went in the next day, I did the open of the teacher's pass. So I went in early, and was setting up the room. I said, oh, can I help you? Oh, yes. I'm Steve, and I started helping him. And I said, yeah, there's a room of women, and you can hypnotize people by looking at them. Is that true? He said, yeah. I said, oh, you won't mind telling me? He said, yeah, absolutely. So he told me while we were setting this room. Nobody else thought to ask him. Everybody was scared. And there's nothing you say about hypnosis, because it's your trance. You go in there to do whatever you want. And so he told me to do it. And it's a thing called, it's a thing called going there first. And he told me this technique. And all it was that somebody who was willing to go into trance So this isn't somebody who just sit opposite in a pub and yell, and they fall into the beer. But somebody who's willing to go into trance, you just sit opposite them, and you actually just look in your eyes, and you build up a rapport between you, and then you start, as soon as you get a rapport between you, you start to go into trance yourself. And because you've got this thing going between you, this nice rapport, that you're very much like each other, the other person follows you. And as they go into trance, just at the last point, you bring yourself out of it, and they go to it, and then they take a deep breath. Which is nothing you need to know about doing that, but that's how I came across to going there first. And then, a few nights later, I watched a TV program with one of these live police ones, and they go around grab villains and all that. And I noticed all the time that they'd grab the villain and they'd have him sort of up against the wall in my room, and then they would start shaking them and going, calm down, calm down, calm down. And then the guy would start fighting again. And I thought, well, there's an example of going there first. So he's, the policeman's fearing being hurt or whatever, he's already got the guy, so he's not chasing him. But he's all this adrenaline that's still pumping around. So he's now getting quite aggressive with this guy. Now, I'm quite a calm guy. If you came up and shook me like that and told me to calm down, I'd punch you. Right? So they're actually triggering these people off again, because he's got adrenaline going in the system and he's just been caught and he didn't really want to be caught. So, whereas if you got hold of it and you still hold and grip them firmly, and you just say, okay, we're going to be calm now, aren't we? Because there's no point in either of us getting hurt, is it? Which shows the scene of doubt that he might hurt as well. Okay, so there's a way there of actually changing things around. So it's about how others react to us. So I'm going to try and get back on the theme here, because it is your attitude as you are. So I've got twin grandchildren. They're entirely different, born minutes apart. So the star signs are the same, but they're entirely different characters. So we're born with a different way of seeing things. And those two children, who'll be brought up in the same house, will actually see things in a different way. And they'll see the same thing that happens in a different way. And it's all about our perception of something. But it's a circular thing. However we perceive something is then what we look out for. So if we think the whole world is against us, that's what we look in everything. This is why we have criminals. They think they need to get things, and the whole world's against them anyway, so stuff them. You know, I'll go out and rob them and cheat them and all that, because it doesn't matter, because everybody's out getting in anyway. So it's all about perception. So if we perceive that nobody likes us, if somebody says something nice, we ignore it. Because it doesn't fit with our model of how we are. And a lot of people think they're not very nice. They just have this inbuilt thing that nobody likes and they're not very nice. A lady came on my stand last weekend. Her two friends, one had been in for 20 minutes and I'd solved the life of the problem. And one had had a 7-minute pre-session with me and I solved the life of the problem. So they then went to the friends, they were coming in. She didn't want to come in. The other two volunteers. So I ended up with this friend who was very timid, and I said, why have they pushed you in here? And there was a few seconds that she was smiling and looking out, so then she went to the foot of tears and just collapsed inward and said, nobody likes me. And I went, oh wow. I could say, why are you crying? If nobody likes you. I said, but you're not allowed to say that anymore. And she said, why? I said, I like you. So in the future, you can never say everybody doesn't like you anymore, because you'll have to say everybody doesn't like me. Apart from Mr. Steve, who I met once. You're going to have to change it. But then, your friends pushed you in here, so they must really care about you. So you'll have to say, nobody likes me except Steve, and my friend, and I said, my friend, Doris. And then she suddenly, there was an awareness there. But then the anxiety came back and she was like, no, I don't know. And I said, what are you afraid of losing? If I got rid of your anxiety, what are you afraid of losing? She said, I become a bad person. And I said, so your mind is in there. And they're like, why? I said, you just told me you were a bad person. So if I took that attitude and you became a bad person, that must mean you're not one there. So which one's the lie? At this point, you got terribly confused, and I couldn't let them all with it because you haven't volunteered for them. But I got so close. And although I deal with people who've been abused and all sorts of things, that never bothered me. Never bothered me. Somebody like that, who I now can help, who escapes that, that really bothers me. Because that person's life could just change. So the way we are, whether we're outgoing optimist or a pessimist or somewhere in between, veering between the two, affects how everybody else deals with us, affects how we deal with ourselves. Because we keep looking for the evidence that we're right all the time. Because we can't cope with the idea that we're treating ourselves like this and we're wrong. That would be terrible, wouldn't it? To keep beating yourself up and then realise that you're wrong for beating yourself up. So we keep beating ourselves up and justify it. And we look for all the reasons to justify it. So when somebody says, oh, you're beautiful, you look, and you say to a woman, you've got a beautiful dress, you're looking gorgeous tonight. Oh, no, it's just something I slipped on. And you've got to imagine the effect that has on the other person. When somebody gives you a compliment, and it's not, you know, the chat-up line, you'll say they just come out for obvious reasons. If it's your partner and they say something nice about you, there's nothing in it for them. They're just telling you because that's how they feel. If you get rejected each time, you're going to change that you do that. You're going to stop handing out the compliments. This is not the male thing, this is either way. If people keep rejecting you, what will you give them a gift? So if I say to you, look, you know, here you are, have a sweet bottle of water for now. It's alright, I haven't done anything with it, it's still got a seal on it. No. Will I offer you another bottle of water? No. Will I offer somebody else a bottle of water? Probably not. Right? You can get so much from rejection. So, I had a woman who came to see me just about weight loss some years ago. And she became a friend, and as I started studying more, she came down and we had long chats. And she had serious problems, she was hypochondriac, and I was quickly able to sort that out, even though that wasn't what she came for. But as we became friends, I realised there was this overall thing inside that she thought everybody didn't like. And I eventually got to the reason, but each week she wouldn't let me take it to the court and sort it out. I just had to keep putting the plaster on it. So this took about an hour, and I noticed the thing. So I kept putting all these plasters on it. And I noticed that she came along, and there was always a complaint about somebody every week. There was this sort of like, one day she got a mortgage. She found a guy who had given her a mortgage 4 years before, who she'd become quite close to, because she did gain things quite easily, which is weird compared with how she thought it was. And she just started this rampage about this guy hadn't returned her message, her text message. And she said, he knows how important this is to me. He knows my father's dying. And she went through all the reasons why this guy should take pity on her and overcome the back. And it's business, and why hasn't he returned the call? And I said, oh, crikey, so that's that bad. How many times have you called him? And she said, never called him. I sent her a text. Are you not listening? And I went, yeah. So have you sent one text? She said, yes. So he sent one text to a busy businessman. He probably didn't get it. I know he wasn't. And I remember this conversation going in circles for ages. And each week she used to say things like, I know what you're thinking about. There's a very good answer to that. You get it. Because just think about it for a moment. So as I look at you all now, just imagine, you know, as I look around the room, I'm thinking about it. Okay? So just take that thought, just say to yourself, in your head, you've got to tell me out, what do you think I'm thinking about as I look at each one? Okay? Now, who here can read minds? You'd be able to stand. Okay? You can't. And I'm going to be even ruder than that. You shoot at it. Right? You cannot wait on. I can nearly do it because I watch people react to what I talk to them and they think I can read minds. I can't. It's not true. It's just I'm very observant. So I watch people and I know what they're up to and what's going on in there. Well, what they're saying and how they're reacting. So when you you know what I'm thinking about you, whose brain has just worked out? Mine or yours? Nobody else. First, she thought of it. When we project into somebody's head what we think that they're thinking about us, it's only what we think about us. It can only be that, because it can only be from your point of view. You are the next single, and actually reflected looking back at what they are, which you can do, there's a technique of doing that, and it gives you more valuable insight. But from here, all you can ever do is when you look in somebody else's head and you go, well, that's what they're thinking about me, that's what you think of you. If you're a confident, you're a positive person, you'll think that they think you're a confident, a positive person. If you're anxious and you don't like yourself, you will project into that person that they don't like. You can't do anything other than that. If you don't like yourself, you cannot project into somebody else that they like you. And your partner might love you to do it, but if you actually don't like yourself, you won't accept that that's the case. You can't. You can't because it's not in your ability to do so. Otherwise, you'd love yourself. So, every week she used to tell me some tale and I used to defend the person and she was attacking and then say, well, just think about this for a minute. Sometimes I do the thing where I actually get people to sit in another chair and physically become that person. So I get them to imagine the person and then I go, right, now you imagine that person in that chair, make it as real as you can. Now go and sit there and become them. Two events ago, a woman came to one of my classes and she came in and she was late and she was the first person to come in through the door. And I'd already said, well, if I get a small audience, I'm going to help somebody. Rather than do what I'm doing, I'm just going to help somebody. So this first woman came in and she went, oh, sorry, I'm 15 minutes late for everything. Oh, good. Sit down. So I said, would you, do you want to continue being 15 minutes late for me? Or would you like to find out how you're doing that? So we went into it. And I said, good. Right. So I quickly got to the reason for it was that she hated school. Gentlemen, somebody here. She hated school and school. I don't think she's had a full-time job or whatever. She didn't get self-employed or whatever. So the only time she ever had to be somewhere on time was when she went to school. And she hated it that much. But now, that represented going somewhere on time represented going to school, which she hated. So she had all the feelings that she had as a small child, hating school, just by being on time. So by deliberately being 15 minutes late, she therefore had her own thing that said, I choose what I do. So it wasn't random. It wasn't like she was sometimes early, sometimes late, whatever. She was actually making that choice at an unconscious level to change it from being school to change it being joy. So, and she said, I'm really pissed off with my friend, right? He pretended that a thing we were going to was 15 minutes earlier than what it was, so that I get there on time. But it was an event they had to christening or something, that they had to get to on time. So he pretended 15 minutes earlier, so she had to arrive on time. But this really annoyed her. She said, I've been manipulated in these horrible manner and I've fallen out with him. So I suddenly said, okay, let's talk to Fred. Fred's in the chair, okay, visualising the chair. Now in the chair, become Fred. And answer everything is only Fred. And she went for it. I mean, she was Fred. And I said, Fred, tell me about your dog. And she goes, oh, always, oh, it's so annoying. I said, well, what about you? Are you ever late? No, I'm always 15 minutes early for you. So I said, oh crikey, you want to be 15 minutes early. So if he's 15 minutes late, you're actually half an hour late, according to you. And she's, you know, I said, how did that make you feel terrible? So why did you do this to me the other day? Well, I thought for once, because we're letting other people down, because I'm already 15 minutes late, we'll actually go there on time, and then the people that we're going to see will think that. But I'll think that. And she suddenly realises how he feels, because that's exactly the same thing that she has when she's early. And then when she looked back around the chair, then it all started to happen that she'd integrated herself. So my friend and I kept going through the scenario every week where she kept telling me what I was thinking about it and what other people were thinking about it. And I kept saying, no, you've got to change it. As soon as you change it, it will change your life. As soon as you realise that what other people think of you, it's none of your damn business. Because it isn't. It's nothing to do with you. You know, in this audience, I can have people who go, that's really good. And people who go, I'm not good for this one. Right? It doesn't matter. I'm telling my truth that might jail you, or you might go, I don't understand that at all, or, you know, it's rubbish. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. I'd rather do it before. So I think having this thing with it, come on, you. And I did start changing that this became less and less and less. Until one day she came with a very smug grin on her. And she said to me, you know how you say I'm terrible at mind reading? And that when I look into their mind, I'm actually reading my own mind. And I think I'm bad. She said, somebody told me that I'm terrible. No, I'm horrible. And I said, ooh, did they? And she's sort of going, well, so that proves it, didn't it? And I went, well, just a minute. If when you think about what other people think about you, it's actually you thinking about that. When somebody says you are horrible, whose brain did that come from? Theirs. That's what they think about themselves. You think about any friend you've got who is really, really nice. Have you ever heard them say anything bad about anyone? No. Because the thing about being nice is that you don't slag people off. And you think about somebody who's a gossip, are they nice people? No, they're not. Because they tell you everything that's going on in your life about all the horrible things that have happened, probably exaggerating them as they go along, and the minute you leave the room, they're going to say the same about you. So it's all about our attitude, is whatever we give off, we then have to just develop real. So we keep this circle going. But pessimists don't have as good lives as optimists. I'm an optimist. I see a group to celebrate with everything. So if I'm out of work, I celebrate the fact that I can now look for a new job that's better than the last one. If I send a CV off, it's because there's an opportunity out there, I might get. So I celebrate that. If I get a reply back saying, oh yes, come for the interview, I celebrate that. I go for the interview, if I get a job, I celebrate that. If I don't get a job, well, pretty good, no problem, because I've just celebrated all the interviews I've gone for. There's some, if you're an optimist, you never lose. You can't lose. If you're a pessimist, you don't want things good to happen to you. Because that would ruin your theory. You wouldn't be able to carry on like that. So, find a pessimist and have an argument with them about optimism is better. And they'll give you 50 good reasons why being a pessimist is a lot better because you know they're disappointed to you. Yeah, they're disappointed. Right? But they live their life in disappointment. That their total life, they just see all the bad things that go on, so they presume that everything is bad. And because that's what we're looking for, that's all we ever see. Now, forgive me for bringing this up from yesterday. This happened to me a couple of weeks ago. Can't read your credit card numbers from there, but can you see there's a little yellow post-it note in there? This was our living room, it's got three crosses there. That was invisible for a week. This is the power of the mind. I had my car robbed about 3 weeks ago on a Monday morning. Oh, I found out on a Monday morning. Woke up early, I was staying at the girlfriend's house, still thought, wanted to get back to Lincoln early. So I woke up about 7 to get on the road, and realised the car's been broken into. Upset at first, but within 10 minutes I've phoned the police, done all the things, found out I need to leave the fingerprinting, just done everything I can. I then go back in the house, and my girlfriend has seen my wallet, and she thought, this is getting up a bit pale, and it puts this lid on top. So then I go to the garage and repair some wheel nuts for 50 quid, and that's about 200 quid of the day. Found all these things out in my glove compartment gone missing, sat in my suit, actually looking in there, checked the car two or three times to find anything. On the Thursday, I found three items that had gone missing were under a blanket on the passenger seat that had sat on. One of them being a glasses case that's about that building, about that deep. And two, a bolt set that's boxed out of that, a salmon, and not noticed it. On the Saturday, following the Monday morning, I went to an event like this with my girlfriend, and all day I'm paying out for drinks and food and everything else. The wallet has come out all week. And I flipped the wallet over late on a Saturday, and my thumb touched that yellow note. Now, my eyes couldn't see it. My thumb went, what's that? And suddenly this note became invisible. So I went, oh, geez, obviously you just put this in there. So I'm thinking, why did you say that in there? Because that's just in the pocket. So I look around and she's there, and I went, oh, thank you, that's lovely. I said, when you put that in there? Monday morning. Oh my God. I said, you're joking, yeah? So in the trauma of this thing of being robbed, my brain went into trauma mode of you deal with in that moment, you're quite focused on it. And I think what's happened is I heard my wallet while I was on the phone, which was over the black laptop, which I placed a post-it note in 3 months before in the bottom left hand corner that said I love you with 3 crosses on it. And my unconscious brain, in this sort of thing, I've got to sort all the little things out, I've looked at that, seen this in the one, and gone, that's the day I'm up to treat it. And from that moment on, it became invisible. It took another sense to come out of touch to go, that's, what's that? And then it became visible. This is how the brain works. You only see what you expect to see. So if you start to change how you feel about things, you actually change the direction of your life. This is what The Secret was all about, the film The Secret, which is quite funny because millions of people watched it and they all thought they'd manifest it, but The Secret left out The Secret. It didn't have all the bits in it. Because the main thing about manifesting something is, first of all, it has to be positive, because anything negative you think about, you attract into your life. Because that's what you're looking for. And your unconscious is like a very clever kid, a naughty one, who will actually look at you in any way possible, which is survival system. So it looks at anything you ask for and it'll try and get it for you. There's nothing wrong, there's absolutely no bad or intent in your unconscious. And I don't get the idea of ego at all. That's just never occurred to me in any of my therapy sessions. I never have to look for somebody's ego. You have a program running that is making you feel the way you do. And it's making you feel the way you do because it's an unconscious program. So it fires off the chemicals in your body before you're aware of what's happening. So the anti-Doris thing, if somebody walks past with a perfume, you go into anti-Doris mode before you realise you're going to be anxious, you're looking around for the foot around about their head, but you're not aware of it. Because it's all running a program in your head. So 99.9% of your life is run by your unconscious, and 99.9% of those things it's doing right, or actually wouldn't have stood here because it would have forgot to run your heart one day, or forgot to make you eat and you'd start with that or whatever. It doesn't forget anything. And the way your brain works is it continually looks to answer questions for you. So if you think about things in the past that are bad, that are now still affecting you, the only one reason is because you've either worked out that you went wrong, so you've installed this program that now goes, I need to be anxious because something's going to happen to me, which it's not. Or it's just terribly wrong. I mean, it's just, you've got this program that just doesn't work for you. But most of the time, it's not. And I've developed a way of talking to the brain that actually taps into that. So we all want to be able to talk to your conscious. Does everyone want to do that? Okay, we'll do some different things. So the general. So if you talk to your conscious, I only ever ask for yeses. Don't treat this like a yes-no quiz where it will give you the right answer every time. That's a bit like flicking a coin and going head to tail. Should I leave the girl? Should I do this? Should I do it? Should I get a technical job? 50% of the time, I'm right. Because if we could affect the flip of a coin, we'd all be millionaires. Could we have a lotto and we'd go to a casino and bet on that all the time and we'd be fine? We can't actually change it. So what I get people to do is talk to their conscience and just get it to give yeses. Now this is a bit like the modern equivalent of exams, where you can't fail them. You either pass or you're not ready to pass yet. It's just an indicator of if you're there yet or you're not there. So if you ask your unconscious for a yes to something, will you join in with this? Will you get with that? And it gives you a yes, it will get it. Because it knows it's capable of doing it. It will never ever give you a yes and then not do it. So I always ask the unconscious to do something for somebody. I'm going to give them a yes, and as soon as it does, I know that's going to happen. If you ask for a no, it's a bit like a naughty kid. So if you say to the naughty kid, do you want to ask for it? No! And then you go, I still want to know. But I've said a no now. So, no. But it's nice for me. No. But you like I still want. No. Right? So never ask your unconscious for a no. So we're going to give you a yes. So if you're all capable of standing up for a few seconds, now we're going to do the other one. What I'd like you to do is just relax. Okay, just chill your arms and just put them in the chill out. And just go to that space wherever you go to if it's nice and nice. Okay, I'm just going to talk to your unconscious for a few seconds and I'll tell you what I want your unconscious to do. Now this is nothing you're trying to do. You don't have to try and do anything. Just let it happen to you. I'd like to thank your unconscious for listening to me today and for joining in. I'd like your unconscious to show you that it actually runs 99% of you all the time. It's running your heart, lungs and everything else. So all we're going to ask it to do today is to make itself known to you. Right? Because in the future you'll be able to use this to actually get back in touch with it, just by talking to it. No traps, nothing. Nobody else does this. You can talk to your unconscious and you can ask it for things and it can do its best to help you every way. It's done that for all you want. So we're just going to start with a thank you to your unconscious and a few just a little bit of thank you to your unconscious because it then gets back. And it's really good, it's never done you any harm whatsoever. It's protected you every second of your life. So we're just going to ask your unconscious to give you a sign. And that sign could be anything, but like jerky forward or backwards or the sign. But I want it to be so profound that you know it's a yes. So just ask your unconscious to give you a yes to show you that it's there. Right? And as soon as you get that sign to yes, please sit down. Okay, just deeply relax. Yeah, you're staring backwards, you can sit down. Okay. But you're not trying to do anything, so just relax and let it happen to you. Just ask your unconscious for something yes. Unless you need to hold it, just have to have a chair for a second. If you just let the chair for a minute. No. If you have something there, just let the chair for a minute. Yeah. Just stand. Nice. That's a little bit of a distance. No, that's it. Good. Okay. Stand around for a second. You're actually in the watch. watch to give you a definite self of yes now. Could you do a twitch of the head? You lean to one side there. Okay. There's not many people in the world who actually get in touch with their own consciousness like that. Right? You're in a privileged few. You can use that any time you want to tell it what you want. You must phrase it in the positive. It doesn't understand the negatives. It also understands to do things for you if you have vivid feelings about it. This is the bit that was missing out of the secret, is the feelings bit. You can build the ball with the car on that you want and the house and all that. But if you don't actually feel you're ever going to get it or want it that badly, you won't get it. The trouble is when we have bad feelings, those are really traumatic feelings. So when we think about the bad thing that we don't want to happen, that's what we're going to get because we're putting the emotion into it. And it goes, this is really important, I must get this to this person. But it doesn't understand the negatives. And the best example I've got of it is a relationship. At the end of a relationship that you don't want to remove yourself from, you start thinking about breaking up. You start doing all the planning of who gets what and who gets the cat and the dog and all sorts of things. At the same time, you're thinking, I don't want this to happen. The brain doesn't understand the I don't want. It goes for the happen. Because all you're thinking about is breaking up. Anything that you think about, if as soon as you realise it's negative, you have to flip it over and think, what's the exact opposite of it? And the exact opposite of any relationship is starting. Right, so when you're starting a relationship, they're wonderful, aren't they? You don't quite know if it's going to last a while, but you start a relationship, the first few weeks is the honeymoon period when everything's hunky-dory. And then when you get to the end of the relationship, all the things you thought were quite cute here become friggin' annoying. Right, you can't start them here, but it's the same thing that you thought was quite cute about them when it's here. So if you take your brain back to that point where you go, okay, what did you do when we first started a relationship? You become the person you were then. And you'll find that either change or it'll be too late for that. And if it's too late for them, you let them go. But as you change, it's more likely that they'll soften and change with you and come back to them. It's the go in there first. And if you're negative all the time, that's what you draw in. If you're positive all the time, that's what you pull in. Positivity and everything else. It's this thing that you can't actually. Love and joy never goes away unless you see that there's got a. If you hold it in you, then it's gone. So if somebody breaks your heart and you actually go, right, I'm never seeing anybody again, it doesn't mend your heart, it continues with a broken heart. In fact, you just weld it in the wrong place. This is well it should. Whereas if you actually then give out more and more love, you can't help but get it back again. So your attitude absolutely determines your life. And if you catch yourself being negative all the time, that's what you have. But if you can bring that around and turn it, and what's the opposite, what's the opposite, what's the opposite? Don't pull yourself up on every single thing, because they reckon we have 70,000 thoughts a day. And that something like 80% of them are negative. Thereby all of madness. But when you do find something that you realise you're going to make it, just say, particularly if it means something to you, because that's more likely to attract it, attract something. If you feel really bad about something, you will attract that. I'll give you a great example just for 1 minute. A friend of mine, had 2 years, his wife died, and when I was part of a married couple, they were our best friends. And I went to the funeral and I didn't find out she was dead until the day before the funeral. And it was just I didn't even know she was ultimately the funeral. And it was such a sudden shock to me, whereas she'd actually been dying for about a year. So my friend was sort of doctor thought whether it was like, it was almost a blessing that she finally might be paying off. But I went to the funeral, stood there on the ground, and then got quite upset about seeing this and the guilt and all sort of thing. And even though I know I started doing the right, well, that's going to suit him, but don't break down. It's his day, it's not anything to do with me. You know, I don't want to put all my guilt and everything else and sorrow on to him. So don't break down. Don't break. I'm in a queue waiting to see him until he passes the flowers, and don't break down. I got to my friend, and I haven't seen him in 15 years, a little bit more. And I wrapped myself around him and went into a gibber. Couldn't talk. Couldn't even excuse myself and say, sorry, I'll stand beside for a minute, which is what I want to say. So he spent about 2 or 3 minutes holding me up. He goes, all right, Stephen. I think it's your wife. You're holding me up, and I'm blubbing, right? But it's your wife, and I could be upsetting you. And it was all because I didn't want to upset him. And that was my thought. I don't want to upset you. So take out the argument that it was upsetting. Luckily, he wasn't upset by it, but my God, I was. And it was a very good lesson to me of everything that I say about being positive is always going to flip around. So, I'd better let you go. I've been Stephen Blake. Please come see me on the stand if you want anything. Thank you for your email addresses. I will write to you in the weekend. You may afford their